Thought that little kid was pretty cute, man. They call him Kid President. I saw another video with him and President Obama. He was sitting in the White House chair, kind of. But he's a cute little kid. I mean, I'm sure we'll probably see more of him in life. Well, it's Mother's Day. I love what he said. Wow, Mom. I entitled mine, Wow, Mom. Wow, Mom. I mean, it's just a mirror image there. Wow, Mom. And so when he says we don't know what that means, I know what that means. I mean, wow, Mom. Moms put the wow in life. Moms make life go wow. Think back to my mom, and I know when we did Christmas, we wouldn't have had Christmas without my mom. My mom made it all happen. I'm sure we have moms out there that do and make things happen. Life, and make it happen with flair, with a little exclamation mark. Make it happen fun and exciting and dynamic. And they make memories. They're memory makers. And so this morning, we want to thank you for wowing us. And we want to thank you for being there for us. So we want to honor you today. We want to honor all of our natural and spiritual moms as well. We have a spiritual mama right here. In Africa, they call her Mom. What do they call her? They call her Mom Cheryl? Mama Cheryl. They call her Mama Cheryl in Africa. All the kids gather around her. Kind of crazy. First thing, they go, they've never seen somebody that white before. But secondly, and most importantly, it's because she has a great heart to give away what's inside of her to those kids. So we want to honor today both natural and spiritual moms. The heart of you ladies that want to give your life away and help people and add value and nurture and care and put the wow factor in there. The wow factor. I thought it interesting. I did some research here and it said, this story I read, it said a couple of years after her mother's death, Anna Jarvis held a ceremony to honor her late mother. The experience so moved her that she began a campaign to establish a formal holiday to recognize mothers. West Virginia adopted the idea in 1910. Other states followed their lead the next year. And in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson proclaimed the second Sunday of May, Mother's Day, a national holiday to honor mothers. Something Jarvis could be proud of. Question mark, it says here. Not exactly. A few years later, and I didn't know this, I knew the first part, I didn't know the second part here. A few years later, she was arrested, Mrs. Jarvis here, was arrested for disturbing the peace at a Mother's Day rally. Jarvis deplored the commercialization of the holiday and the way people used it to make profits. In 1923, she filed a lawsuit to stop a festival where organizers were selling white carnations as a fundraiser on Mother's Day. She didn't lead a campaign to begin this holiday so card companies and florists could make money. She wanted it to be a day that stirred sentiment in the children of the world. She was more successful, though, in starting the day than stopping it, because it did not stop. Regardless of what some people's motives are, the idea of honoring mothers was contagious. Now, I can understand the idea of all that, but I think that, you know, flowers and cards and all those things that you can help to kind of show the aspect to your mom that you love her and care about her and you're thinking about her don't necessarily have to be a bad thing. They can also be a good thing. But I love the heart of this lady trying to start it to make sure that we sincerely thanked the ladies. Sincerely thanked the ladies. So this morning I want to give you seven qualities of a mother. Seven biblical qualities as seen from Scripture of mothers. Number one, mothers. She wants the best for her children. And mom just wants the best for her kids. They want life to be better than the life that they went through. They're trying to make it better than where they were at. And I want to talk here about the mother of James and John. Found in Matthew 20, 20 through 23. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons, James and John, came to Jesus with her sons in tow, kneeling down and asking something from him. She's going to ask something from Jesus. Now, Mrs. Zebedee was most likely Salome. She was a sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. She was the sister of Mary, the mother of Jesus. This would make James and John the cousins of Jesus, all right? James and John then would have been the cousins of Jesus. So these cousins are coming with their mom asking Jesus for something. And Jesus said to her, "What do you wish?" I thought it very interesting that the word that Jesus used here. He says, "What do you wish?" He didn't say, "What do you want?" He said, "What do you wish?" Because when we wish for something, don't we? We want certain things, but when you add a wish list into it, when you add a wishful thought, doesn't that just kind of accelerate the idea a lot? You know, it's kind of like if you wanted something and you want it, but somebody says, "But what do you wish for?" You say, "I want a car. I need transportation." But if somebody said, you know, so you're thinking, "Well, I'll get a 1998 Honda Civic." Okay? I need transportation. But that's what I want. Well, maybe you don't really want that, but that's what I need. But if I said, "What do you wish for?" You might wish for a Lamborghini. I mean, you wouldn't want a 1998 Honda Civic. You would wish for something far beyond that. Far beyond that. And Jesus uses, "What do you wish?" I think also sometimes the Lord is trying to say to us, "What do you wish for? What do you wish for? Instead of just what you want, what do you wish for?" And I think also, not just selfishly, but what do you wish for to do for the kingdom? What do you wish would happen in your life? What do you wish you could impart to your children? What do you wish you could do at your job? What do you wish? Something beyond just the get-by stage of, "Here, well, here's what I need," or "Here's what I want," but "Here's what I wish for." And so she expands this thing. "Oh, you're asking me for a wish? Well, here's what I wish for." And so I'll tell you what, she just shoots for the moon. You just shoot for the moon when you got a wish for something. And here she is, she's shooting for the moon. She's wishing for it all. And she said to him, she says to Jesus, "Grant that these two sons of mine, James and John, may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your kingdom." Now that was a very powerful request. I mean, she really was wishing upon a star here. I mean, she was really going for the moon. Those were the power positions, the left and right hand. She was asking to give them power, honor, prestige. Now here's another note, though, I thought very interesting. That she didn't say, "Grant that I may sit on either your right or left hand." She didn't ask it for herself. I thought very interesting. A mother always wants something better for her kids. She would sacrifice herself in order for her kids to get more. And here she is, not asking herself. She's asking for her children that they would have this honor. She didn't ask for her. She asked for her kids. She wants the best for her kids. But Jesus answered and said, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" They said to him, "We are able." James and John, they both say to him, "We are able." And when he talks about drinking this cup and this baptism, he's talking about, are you willing to go through all that I'm going to have to go through? All the pain, the agony. I'm going to be tortured. I'm going to be put on a cross. I'm going to go through a number of things here in agony. Are you ready to do that? And they say, they are. And then he says, so he said to them, "You will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with." As we go through the story, we know that James was the very first apostle that was martyred for his faith. And then John becomes the very last one, either martyred or passed away. We don't know that he actually was martyred, but he lived the longest. But he was boiled in a cauldron. I mean, he was banished to an island. He went through a lot of things in the process as well. But he says, "But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it's for those for whom it is prepared by my Father." Now she knew she was asking for a very powerful thing, a very prestigious thing, but it's the heart of a mother that gets in there and is willing to try, willing to ask, willing to wish. Don't you mothers wish for great things for your children? Don't you pray for them and wish for great things for the kingdom of God, that God will use them in powerful and wonderful ways? That's the heart of a mom. I like this next part I put down here. She doesn't give up easily. A mother doesn't give up easily. In Matthew 27, 55 through 56, it says, "And many women who followed Jesus from Galilee ministered to him where they were looking on from afar." This verse right now, we're going to speed ahead to, there he is on the cross. Everybody else scatters, but these women stay. Among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joses, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. She was there to the bitter end, and that's a mom. She doesn't give up easily. She'll stay to the end. She'll stay there loving, caring, believing. There's nothing like, you know, as a mom becomes a mom and goes to a grandma. I mean, I can't tell you how many men and women have come to God because of the prayers of a grandmother who will not give up on her kids. I don't care how bad he's been. I don't care what he's going through. They'll slap him on the side of the head and they'll keep believing that God will do something in their lives. Moms, and especially grandmas, they do not stop. If they got a grandkid who doesn't know the Lord, I'll tell you what, they're praying for you, and you might as well just give up and just accept Christ. They don't give up easy. No matter if times are good or times are bad, they just don't give up easy. Number three, the qualities of a mother. She has compassion. So much more than I think that a guy does. They have this aspect of compassion. They have this feeling. They have these moments. You know, where the tears come and then they have to fan themselves with their hands that do no good. I don't even know why they do that. But it's because of the compassion. It's because of the feeling. They feel. They feel with you. They have this compassion. I'm going to talk about Moses' mom, and I'm talk about Pharaoh's daughter here in this next section about compassion. In Exodus 1, 22, it says, "So Pharaoh commanded his people, saying, 'Every son who is born of you shall cast into the river.'" It was the law of Pharaoh. It was the law of the land that they were to throw and to kill these kids by throwing them into the Nile River. "And every daughter you shall save alive." And then the next verse goes on and says, "And a man of the house of Levi went and took as wife a daughter of Levi. So the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him." It was a he, so she had to hide him. I tell you, that mom is not going to get rid of her kid. She would rather die before, you can pull this kid from my dead red hands or something. I mean, it's you're not going to get that kid out of her hands. She's not going to let this kid go and let him die. So she hides him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she took an ark for him and she dabbed it with asphalt and pitch and put the child in it and laid it in the reeds by the riverbank. Now I thought it was interesting here. Technically, she obeyed the law of the land because they said you're supposed to cast him into the river. She just put a boat under him as she put him in the river. I mean, the other thing I didn't put in here, moms are ingenious. They're able to go far beyond. They're great thinkers. And they're multitaskers too. They can think, do, design, plan, program, clean, vacuum, all in the same sphere. I mean, all at the same time. Now, no guy can do that. If you're watching a football game, that's all I can do is watch a football game. Can you multitask? No, because I got to watch the football game. I get on one track. Get on one track. Do it, do it, do it. Women, they can multitask. So technically, she fulfilled the letter of the law. She cast him to the river, but she was not about to kill her son. She would rather kill herself first. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. So here's this compassion. You can understand it's her natural kid. So Moses' mom has this compassion for him, and she's going to stretch the law. She's going to do whatever she can to make sure she preserves the life of her kid. But then we go to Pharaoh's daughter. And then we see this thing that's just built. It's just the hard wire of women. It says, "Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. There's not a mom around that when a baby's crying doesn't want to run and grab it. There's not a guy around that doesn't want to go, "Can you keep him quiet? I'm watching the game." So she had compassion. Man, something happens. Weeping, that this idea of a difficult time, things that go on in your life, there's nothing like a mom who has compassion on you, cares for you. Had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrew children. This is one of the Hebrew children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the maiden went and called the child's mother. She went and got her own mom and got the mom of Moses and came back. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." Now, wouldn't every mom love that? To get paid for taking care of your own kids. Wouldn't you love that? Here it is. God works it out in a great way. He actually pays Moses' mom for taking care of him. Instead of paying daycare bill, she got a subsidy. It came into her. So the woman took the child and nursed him, and the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of the water." I thought a couple of interesting things in this story. She took in Moses off the river. Why? Why did she do that? The scripture here says, because she had compassion, because he wept, and she had compassion. But think about what her compassion had to override. Her compassion had to override a number of natural obstacles. But I'll tell you what, when you get a lady who has compassion, she will override a whole bunch of obstacles. Look at the obstacles she had to override with this compassion. Her compassion had to overcome these obstacles. Number one, Moses wasn't her baby. It wasn't hers. It was just a baby floating down the river. It wasn't hers. It wasn't her deal. She didn't have to get involved. She could have just turned her head and walked the other way. "Hey, it's not mine. Don't have to worry." But she had compassion. She heard that baby weep. And all of a sudden, she has compassion. She gets involved. She doesn't just pass by uninvolved, but she gets involved. First thing she had to do, get involved over a baby that wasn't even her own. Secondly, Moses was a Hebrew. A Hebrew baby. I mean, those were the slaves. Those were the lower class. Those were the nobodies that were building all of our pyramids and all of our great stuff. They were the outcasts, the nothings, the disregard, the put them in the trash can, drown them in the river. That's who these Hebrews were. But you know what? Her compassion overcame the stereotype. Her compassion overcame any stereotype or discrimination against the Hebrews. Second obstacle she had to overcome. Thirdly, she had to oppose the law of the land. She had to oppose her father in order to keep him. In order to keep him, she had to go against what her father said. She defied her father's decree. Her father's law, her father's order. She had to overcome that obstacle, and she did. And fourthly, she must have lied to her father too. I mean, she brings him into the house. "Who is this?" I wonder what she said. "Oh, didn't you know I was pregnant? We haven't seen each other in a couple of years, and look what I have." I don't know what happened there and the dialogue that must have taken place or what, but she had to overcome a number of obstacles, and compassion, folks, overcomes obstacles. It's God's compassion on us that overcomes all of our defiance and all of our walking our own way and all of our shaking our fist at God, that overcomes all that and keeps pursuing you and keeps pursuing you and keeps pursuing you and keeps going after you and keeps loving you because God has compassion. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, I wanted to gather you like a hen gathers her chicks. The same way a mother would care about all that's out there. That's how I care about you. Compassion. Moms, you have some amazing compassion, and it causes you to override, it causes you to overcome all sorts of obstacles. A great lesson, all of us, we can learn from that. Does your compassion overcome obstacles today? Not just easy. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sure it wasn't easy for Pharaoh's daughter right then as she was making some decisions of what she was going to do. It wasn't easy to keep this child, but she did because her compassion was so strong. Like I said, I think females, they're hardwired to gawk at babies and get involved. They just do. Man, we can walk away. Women, they just got to get involved. They got to get in there. I'm not trying to say put a bad light on me. There's a lot of great guys and we get involved there too. But it just comes so naturally for women. You're amazing. You're amazing at it. I think of Kaylee. She loves to grab little Chloe and you know, it's like, I mean, and carry her around. She'll change her diapers and she does all of this stuff for that little baby. Now, Joey wouldn't do that. Well, actually, we better not let Joey even try, but there's something inside of him that has this great compassion. Ladies, you're amazing. And we love you and we thank you for that. Fourthly, she's protective. A mother, she's protective. Think about Solomon and the two prostitutes, the two ladies. In 1 Kings 3, 16 through 23, two prostitutes are living in the same house. Each had a baby 3 days apart. One of the baby boys dies during the night and his mother exchanged the dead child for the living child while the other mother was sleeping. She makes the switch. In the morning, when the other woman discovered that the dead son was not hers, and I'm sure she found that out really quick. I look at babies and I can't distinguish nothing. They go, "Now, who do you think he looks like?" And I go, "I have no idea. I cannot distinguish those characteristics." I know some people are really good at it. "Oh, she looks like you. He's got your nose and your eye and your ear." And I go, "You know, most ears look the same to me. Most eyes look the same to me. All I can distinguish is color. I know that they're different colors." All right? And he have hair. I mean, these are just basic elements that to me make up a person. And I go, "Okay, good." But they can see all that. They notice all of that stuff. And this mom was going, "This is not my child. This is not my child. This is your child. That's my child. You're going to give me my child back." I'll tell you what, you don't want to... That's like a bear robbed of her cubs. I'm sure this mother was really angry. I mean, coming after her. "Give me my child back." I mean, I'm sure it got really hot and steamy. In the morning, when the other woman discovered that the dead child was not hers, the guilty mother refused to admit her wrongdoing. Unable to settle the dispute, they appear before the king, King Solomon, each one claiming the living infant was hers. And you know the great wisdom of Solomon. Solomon ordered that the baby be cut into two. One half given to you, the other half given to you. Hey, you each can have a half. And as he had anticipated, the real child's mother, not wanting it killed, volunteered to let the other woman have the baby rather than have the sword divided. When the other woman argued that the baby should be cut in two, it was evident to the king that she, having no compassion for the child, was not the living son's mother. I'll tell you, mothers, they're so protective. They so, like a mother bear, they care about their kids, and it's important. Number five, she's willing to sacrifice and deny herself. It's an amazing thing I think about women and you're amazing. And I want to just tell a story. I we were in our illustrator meeting and we were chatting about the message and we came up Rory was talking about a story he thought he heard a while ago, and we looked it up. And I want to tell this story. It's a true story, and it's about Jenny Lake of Pocatello, Idaho, just locally, fairly local here. Jenny Lake of Pocatello, Idaho, was an unwed pregnant teen. She was 16 years old when she got pregnant. And prior to her pregnancy, she was having these migraines. And the migraines that were in her head, they were found to be brain tumors that needed to have chemo and radiation treatments to fight the cancer. So she started on those. Then she found out that she was pregnant. And if she did the chemo and radiation, continued with it, it would kill the baby. They were ready to abort the baby to save her life. And yet this 16-year-old girl, she elected to forego the chemo and radiation till after the delivery. She decided, no, I'm gonna quit that. She had these tumors in her brain and a few in her spine. She says, I'm gonna forego those until after the delivery. The baby came to full term and she delivered it. And she says this, I'm done. I did what I was supposed to do. My baby is going to get here safe. That's what then, she now had turned 17-year-old, Jenny Lake told a nurse after she delivered her son, Chad Michael Lake. Chad Michael Lake. 12 days later, on November 21st, 2011, the teen mom died from the brain tumor that she had been fighting for more than a year. Her final request was that Chad lay beside her while she passed away. I thought, wow, willing to sacrifice and deny self in order to allow her child the chance at life. And she did that at the age of 16. 16 years old. Wow. Wow. Jenny chose to give up her life so her baby could live. That is sacrifice. In a day and age where selfishness prevails, she elected the higher road of sacrifice. Wow. What a lady. Number six. She comforts in Isaiah 66:13. As a mother comforts her son, so I, God, will comfort you, and you will be comforted in Jerusalem. I thought this was an amazing scripture. As a mother comforts her son, so I will comfort you. God will comfort you. This verse is undoubtedly the greatest compliment mothers could receive. When God wanted to use a metaphor to explain the compassion he has for his people, he compared himself to mothers. He compared himself to mothers. Mothering and comforting are synonymous. Number seven. She's a disciple or a mentor. Our last point, number seven. She's a disciple or a mentor. In this story, it's Paul speaking to Timothy about his faith and about his heritage in 2 Timothy. He's speaking to him about his faith and his heritage. And he's going to bring up his grandmother Lois and his mother Eunice. I think Eunice means victorious. He's going to bring up his grandmother and his mother. In 2 Timothy 1, 5 through 9, it says this. Paul speaking to Timothy. When I call to remembrance the genuine faith, I'll come back to that moment, the genuine faith that is in you. It got in you. This genuine faith got in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois, and then in your mother Eunice. And I am persuaded that it is in you also. That genuine faith passed down to him from his grandmother and mother. They were there discipling inside of this young man. And that genuine faith was in him. How did he get there? By his grandma by his mom. I love this too. It says this genuine faith. Genuine faith. It was a genuine faith. Not just, yeah, I'm saved. I'm walking along, doing life, whatever. When I die, I'll go to heaven. There was something inside of him that was so genuine, so real, that was it transformed his whole life. Because a genuine faith transforms your life, the here and the now, not just the later. It does transform the later, where we end up in this whole thing. But a genuine faith transforms the here and now as well. And his here and now is transformed. It was a genuine faith. I love this word genuine or sincere, the sincere faith. We were last weekend seeing Carrie's dad, and we went to church, and Pastor Kevin was preaching a message, and I was listening to it, and I was taking notes on my iPad. I told him I wasn't texting. I was taking notes. And he was talking about this word sincere. It's a Latin word. That means a Latin word is sincerus. It's a Greek word that comes from Latin, sincerus. And it was interesting. He talked about how this word was derived, this sincere faith, this genuine faith, this sincerus. What happened is this. When Rome overtook the Greeks, the Greek Empire was a world empire for a while, and the Romans come and conquer and overtake them. And as they came in, the Greeks were very strong in culture and in artisans and in theatrics and all of that. They were great into culture, and they had all of these things that they had made. And when the Romans came in, they were so domineering, they just busted everything up. And then as time went by, they realized, hey, there's value in Greek culture. So their artifacts and all of the, not artifacts, but all of their artisans' works became valuable. And what happened is all of the things that had been busted up, and these artisans would try to fix them. And some of the artisans would fix them by, there'd be holes and little problems in there. They would take wax and they'd fix wax. They'd put all this wax in those holes, file it all down, and it would look really great. And so they'd come in, they'd buy them, they'd put these things out in their gardens, and then as time went by and it got hot, got really hot in the day, the wax would begin to melt, and you'd see all these imperfections, you'd see all these holes in the work. And so people became very wary of trying to buy some of those things. Here's what the artisans did. The artisans that didn't do that, they didn't put the wax in there and put metal back in there and try to recreate it and fix it all up using what they should have used, good quality product, they would stamp on the bottom of it, sinceris. And the word sinceris, what it meant was no wax. No wax. There is no wax in this. It's sincere. No wax. When Paul talks about our faith, a genuine or a sincere faith, sincere, is it sincerous? Is there no wax in it? Is there nothing in there that when the heat of the day begins to melt all of the junk that you've kind of got as a facade, that all of a sudden it's not just phony, it's just not melting, but it's real, it's sincere, it's good, it will stand the test of time. There's no holes in your faith, but it's solid, strong, sure, genuine, sincere, no wax. Timothy, what Eunice and Lois put in their kid was no wax. It was sinceris. Sincere, genuine, true faith. I want to end here with responsibility. Responsibility of kids toward their mom. Now, how many out there are kids? Everybody raise your hand, because we are all kids, all right? You had a mother, believe it or not. You were not hatched, okay? You had a mother. Even if you had a mother, you were hatched. I mean, even if you were hatched, you had a mother. It's just, we all had a mother. We're all kids. We're all kids. And the kid's responsibility twofold. Leviticus 19:3. Every one of you shall revere, show respect for his mother and father, First responsibility is to respect. Respect your mother. My mother was awful. That's all right. Still respect her. My mother wasn't there for me. That's all right. Still respect her. I had a bad mother. That's okay. Still respect her. Love her. Pray for her. I had a great mother. Great. Respect her. Sometimes I think we just don't give them the respect that they're due. Every one of you shall revere, show respect for his mother and father. Number two, in Deuteronomy 5:16, honor your mother. Honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded. No, has suggested, has thought a good idea. You know, it's interesting. It's a commandment. It's a commandment. It's one of the Ten Commandments that we're to honor our mother. Honor her. Honor her. And if you'll honor her, it says that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord God has given you. Here's the blessings of kids for doing what God asks us to do. If we'll respect our mom, if we'll honor our mom, the kids' blessing, our blessing is you'll have a long life. Mr. Nordquist, he honored his mom. Having a long life. And a long beard. He's a guest on Duck Dynasty. I mean, he's... I love it, by the way. I think it looks great. It makes you look really wise, but you already looked wise. What do you think? You're glad you didn't? Do you like his beard? Yeah. Good, 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 good. All right. I don't want to cause trouble. I'm going to leave. Long life. It's true. I mean, I think sometimes we think, oh, well, those are for a long time ago and all that stuff and it doesn't really happen and blah, 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 blah. Really? Long life? It's what he says. Do you want a long life? Do you want a long life? Honor your mom. Whether she's good or bad, it doesn't make any difference. He just said, honor her. If you want a long life, if you want a short life, disrespect her, diss her. Don't care about her. Turn your back on her. Say mean things. Be sarcastic. Don't do what she asks you to do. Do all that. Believe me, God is true. Your life won't be as long. The other thing he says is it will be well. The next blessing is a good life, a well life. Oh, I live pretty long. But how well is your life going if you're not going to honor your mom? The Bible says it won't go well. It won't go well. If you've got issues with your mom, then deal with them. Love her anyway. If you don't have issues, show her and tell her how good she is, how awesome she is, how wonderful she is. It's good for her, and it's good for you as well. The word honor means honorable, to make weighty. Long means to draw out, to lengthen, to be well, to have a well life, is happy, successful, and right. Moms, love them because you won't always have them. Thinking about my mom, my mom, as you know, she's dying from pancreatic cancer. And the last time Carrie and I were there, just having fun with her, I do crossword puzzles. We're the only time in our life we actually do crossword puzzles, really. My mom's amazing at them. She remembers everything. She's got a mind as sharp as a tack. The last time we were there, and we had a great time, stayed for a couple of days, and then when I had to go, and I've never really seen her, she just really broke down and wept. And when she started just crying, you know, I just realized I'm not going to have very many more of these. I love my mom. She's an amazing mom. I told Carrie, you know, growing up, my mom was like a, you know, she didn't have to work. My dad worked, and so when it came time for breakfast, we all got to order whatever we wanted. It was like we went to a restaurant. One wanted scrambled eggs, one wanted oatmeal, one wanted... And for, lucky for her, I really liked oatmeal, so I had oatmeal all the time. But she was willing to fix eggs, this, that, and the other, and blah, blah, blah. Literally, whatever you wanted. Each kid, a different thing. I thought, wow, you put your order in a little bit ahead of time, and boom, it was there. My mom would wake me up in the morning, help me get ready for school. She made my bed when I left. I mean, now I'm not saying that every mom should make your bed, because honestly, you probably should make your own bed. Learn some discipline. One day I found one of her fingernails in my bed. She had those glue-on type, you know. And then I think one of the greatest compliments she says to me, she goes, I have five brothers and sisters, and all of them except my other sister.